Well, let's go back to Matthew 23. We're looking at the eight woes that Jesus is pronouncing on Israel. He has done more than could be expected, trying to get them to recognize who he was and to accept him as the Messiah that he was. And they refuse to. They'll have none of him. And it's finally just come to the point to where he's saying, okay, if you don't want me, I'll leave. If you don't accept me, I'll leave you alone. And that's what he's doing. But he doesn't just walk off and leave them alone. He's pronouncing some judgments. And as I mentioned last time, he wasn't just saying, this is just some kind of wish, or this is just some empty words. He is literally pronouncing judgment. He is pronouncing these woes. We could say, in essence, in reality, he is cursing them, and he's saying these things will transpire. And in verse 15, it says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye compass sea and land to make one proselyte. And when he is made, ye make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves." This is the third woe. This deals with seducing. They are seducing people into believing what they believe. The first woe dealt with shutting. Jesus said, you don't enter the kingdom of heaven, and you don't let those that are entering. You shut the door to the kingdom of heaven. People of Israel thought they were the gatekeepers, more or less. They thought, we've got the law, we got the way. And they did have the law, and they did have the way, but through their traditions, through the years, they had forgotten the way. And they would not accept the way, the Messiah that was coming, the Lord, the forgiveness that was going to be or would be provided. So the first woe dealt with shutting. The second dealt with stealing. He was talking about how they were devouring widows' houses through pretense. Actually made long, pretentious prayers in hoping that would touch the heart of people and that would help them to give more. It's just amazing how hypocritical these people were, thinking they were right with God and convincing others that they were. And here he says, woe unto you, Pharisees, hypocrites again, because you compass sea and land, to make one proselyte. He's saying it's not just good enough for you. You're not satisfied. You're not content with just being wrong yourself. You're trying your best to get somebody else to believe what you're saying, so you're making somebody else wrong. Now, they thought they were right. Don't misunderstand me. And he's saying you do everything you can. You'll go anywhere to anybody, big city, little city, little hamlet, wherever, and you're trying your best to make a proselyte. A proselyte is someone who changes from one religion to another. And that's what they were doing. They again were spreading their error, trying to convince people to follow them and to believe their lies to be the truth. And then notice what he says, you make them twofold the child of hell than yourself. And that certainly is the case many times even today. In other words, their converts were worse than them. Now, how can that be? Well, I mentioned just a minute ago, some people are raised in church and they are religious, but they're lost. And then they get saved and there's a difference. They walk with God, they love Him, and their life is different. But so many times, someone who really gets out of the depths of sin, someone who really has a wicked life, when they get saved, it does seem like many times their life is, if you will, more dedicated and they are more sold out than someone who's been more or less raised in a religious and has a religious background. And that's what Jesus is saying here. You find these people who do not know the truth, and when they become your converts and your proselytes, they're doing more than you're doing. They, if you will, the steward surpasses the student surpasses the teacher. Look on in beginning in verse 16. We'll look at the fourth woe. In verse 16, woe unto you blind guides, which say whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing. But whosoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, he is a debtor. He's dealing here with swearing. First, woe, shutting. Second, stealing. Third, seducing. The fourth is swearing. They all hear about swearing, or Jesus does. Notice how he introduces, or he addresses them, I should say. He calls them blind guides. I thought about a guide. A guide is someone who is leads someone who does not know the way to the right way to the place you need to get. And a guide has to know the way themselves and has to be able to discern the way and get from point A to point B to make it on their own. But what if that guide is blind? I thought about a man stumbling through a maze, a blind man trying to find his way through a maze. Well, finding his way himself would be almost impossible. Let's say that man not only is trying to stumble through himself and find the way through the maze himself, but he's also at the same time calling others and saying, come on and follow me and I'll lead you through. Well, that's what Jesus is saying they are. They're trying to guide somebody when they're blind themselves. What does the Bible say? They'll both fall in the ditch. They'll both be in danger. They'll both suffer the consequences. But he noticed, he says, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing. He's talking about swearing, which means about what we think it to be. Well, maybe if you think of the right thing, it's that, because it's not swearing like cursing, but it's swearing like making promises like this. I swear on my mama's grave. I say that as a reference and not a real phrase. Or I'll swear on a stack of Bibles that I'm telling the truth. Or I swear on a stack of Bibles that I will be there tomorrow. You make a promise, or a person makes a promise or an oath, or they swear, I am telling you the truth. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. Now, the problem with that is it suggests that there's sometimes you don't tell the truth. If someone has to swear that I'm telling the truth this time, it suggests that they aren't telling the truth other times. And that's what Jesus is talking about. He is going to say, and he says in other places, and the Bible says it too, why don't you just tell the truth all the time? Let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. In other words, don't live in such a way to where when you try to tell somebody something, they wonder if you're really telling the truth or not. He says, tell the truth. But notice what he says. Whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing. Now, they had devised a way whereby, just to be honest, they could swear and or they could make an oath or make a promise and not keep it. We do the same type of thing. We say, well, I promised to be there. Oh, I had my fingers crossed, so that don't count. Well, that really is not legal. I'll just tell you, not spiritually legal. That there's not a verse in the Bible that says you can cross your fingers. But here's what they're saying. They said, if you swear by the temple, you can get out of that. It's not binding. It, literally, he said, it is nothing. But whoso shall swear by the gold of the temple, he is a debtor, or he has to pay his due, or he has to keep his promise. A debtor means you owe something that you have to pay. And Jesus, they had devised a way whereby they could make an oath and make a promise and wiggle out of it. And they thought that God was okay with this. He wasn't. I'll just put it that way. He wasn't. It was nothing less than lying. If you doubt how that applies, or if you wonder how God feels, go and ask Ananias and Sapphira. They said, boy, we sold the land and we gave all the money. In essence, we kept our promise, but they were lying. We don't know why they changed their mind. It was a good idea and a good promise. They just didn't follow through. They said, we'll sell the land, give the money. Maybe they got more than what they expected. Maybe they thought about what all these extra bills. Well, we could sure use this money. And they gave part of the money, but they said they gave it all. And God knew about it. And just to be honest, he didn't like it so good. So he just killed the boat. Look on in verse 17, you fools and blind. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm not sure we can handle Jesus. He's not pulling any punches. you fools and blind, or whether is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifieth the gold. He said, you talk about if you swear by the temple, you can get out of that. Or if you make an oath or a promise and you swear by the temple, I swear by the temple I will keep my promise. He said, well, you can get out of that because the temple's, it's just a building. But then they said, if you swear by the gold on the temple or in the temple, then you got to keep that promise. And Jesus said, which do you think is better, the temple itself or the gold of the temple? And he says, listen, that sanctifieth the gold. Gold in the temple was nothing more than gold. But when it came into the temple and became a part of God's building, all of a sudden it became, if you will, holy, because it was a part of God's building. It was given to the Lord. It no longer was just ordinary gold. It was, if you will, spiritual gold. And Jesus said, it doesn't matter if you're talking about the temple or the gold in the temple. It still, all of it belongs to God. The only reason the gold is special is because it's in the temple. And the only reason the temple's special, because it belongs to God, it's built to Him and His glory. And that's what makes it the difference. If it wasn't for God, the gold in the temple would be nothing but a building and a bunch of minerals, a bunch of elements. But God makes it different. And that means you can't swear by either and get by if you don't keep your promise. Look on in verse 18. And whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing. And whosoever swear by the gift of the, that is upon it, he is guilty. He continues the thought of explaining what they believed and tried to teach. They said, if you swear by the altar, oh, you can get out of that. It is nothing. It doesn't mean, I mean, it's just a piece, if you will, it's just a step. It's just a piece of wood or a piece of marble or a, it's just a stone. If you swear by the altar, it's nothing. But whoso sweareth by the, whosoever sweareth by the gift that is upon the altar, then he's guilty or he owes the, he's got to keep his promise. Again, they're splitting hairs. He said, they're saying, if you swear by the altar of the temple, you're going to keep your promise. Well, you can wiggle out of that. Later on, you change your mind. That's okay, because that swear really doesn't, that oath really doesn't matter. You're just swearing by an altar. You're just swearing by a step. But he said the gift, the offering, the offerings that people came and gave to the priest, that the priest offered on this altar, they said, if you swear by that gift or by that offering, then you're guilty. You got to keep your promise. You see, they're splitting hairs. Notice in verse 19, you fools and blind. Just in case you missed it the first time, I'll tell you what you are again. For whether is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifieth the gift? Again, he says the same thing that he said back in verse 17. Hey, the gift, the altar, the temple, the gold, it doesn't matter. You can split hairs all you want to. It's all God's because it's dedicated to God and it's holy. And you should respect it more than making oaths on it, promising on it. But especially if you're not trying to, if you're not planning on keeping your promise. And see, that was the whole issue. They weren't planning to keep the promises they were making the whole time. They wanted to sound good. I stand up in a service, I promise on the altar, I'll give everything I get from selling my field. I'll give it to the church, or I'll give it to the temple, or I'll dedicate it to the Lord. And they knew the whole time it didn't really mean it. They were making a promise they thought they could get out of. Verse 20, whoso therefore shall swear by the altar, swear by it, and all the things thereon, he said, if you swear by one thing, you're swearing by it all. You can't separate the gold from the temple. You can't separate the offering from the altar. You can't separate the building from the God of the building. So he said, your plan doesn't work. You can't separate these things. God connects them all. Verse 21, and whoso shall swear by the temple sweareth by it, by him that dwelleth therein, and he that shall swear by heaven, sweareth by the throne of God, and by him that sitteth thereon. Jesus took it outside the temple. He said, you start swearing by heaven, you're swearing by the God of heaven. In other words, you know what he's saying? Altar, gold, temple, offering, heaven, God's over it all. And if you're going to make a promise, you better keep your promise. Heaven and earth belongs to God, and you can't separate any of it. It is all under the realm of his authority. Verse 23 starts the fifth woe. This woe deals with straining. They're straining gnats and swallowing camels, as we'll see. Verse 23. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These all ye two have done, and not leave the other undone. Ye blind guides, we strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. They're straining here. He said, you tithe of mint and anise and cumin. Those were herbs. They were herbs with little bitty leaves or little bitty seeds. And these people were so strict religiously, and they believed, rightfully so, that they were to give a tenth to God, so they would get into their little herb gardens, and literally, this is 10 seeds, 9 for me, and 1 for God. 10 leaves of mint, 9 for me, and 1 for God. Jesus said, you are so strict, you are so precise in your giving and your tithing. In other words, you abide by your rules and your regulations so precisely that you even go down to the most minute of detail. But then he said, you leave the weightier matters of the law undone. You're real concerned about the little things, the gnats, but you're not concerned at all about the big things, the camels. Notice, the matters that he mentioned, the weightier matters of the law, was judgment, justice for people, treating people right, mercy, loving others, caring about people, being merciful and kind, and faith, trusting God, believing in God, living for God, obeying God. I can just brush through those three things and realize they're more important than getting into their herb garden and make sure they counted their seeds right. But what's wrong with giving 8 seeds to God and keeping 2 seeds yourself, or 9 or 10 or 10 or 5 and 5? I mean, listen, the problem is that they're trying to be so precise in their rules, but they've ignored the things that really matter. And we as Baptists, we as independent Baptists, we as fundamental Baptists, we as conservative Baptists, we as, I don't know what else I can say, we need to be careful too. I think our standards are right, and we ought to keep them right. But we may dress right, but if we don't act right, which is more important? I think if we act right, we'll dress right, talk right. But Jesus said, don't forget the weightier matters. They're failing in 3 areas, judgment, mercy, and faith. Notice what he says though. These things all you two have done. He is not really just doubting the fact that they're tithing correctly. What he is saying is, go ahead and tithe correctly. And I don't think he's saying you really need to count those seeds and you really need to count those herb leaves. I believe he's just saying it's right to tithe. It's right to do those things, but don't forget the things that are more important. Don't forget the most important things. Look in verse 24. You blind guys, you strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. Again, the words, blind guys. They rightfully so, a gnat was an unclean animal and an insect animal. And a camel was an unclean animal, biblically. If someone came in contact with a gnat, if someone came in contact with a camel, they were ceremonially unclean for a period of time. And especially if a gnat flew into your drink and you drank that dead gnat, that gnat carcass wouldn't deem you unclean. Or if you touched a dead camel, anything dead wouldn't render you ceremonially unclean. If you remember when we enjoyed Leviticus back a while back, if you want to use the word enjoyed, you found out that touching dead animals made you ceremonially unclean. It's an interesting. Jesus didn't just pull two things out of the air. The smallest animal that was unclean in their regard was a gnat. And the largest animal that was unclean in their regard was a camel. So he's saying, you strain these little things and you swallow these big things. You are so intent to keep the little things and you ignore the big things. Can you imagine the illustration he's picturing here? Someone has, he's getting ready to drink something and a gnat comes and he's very careful to strain that thing out. And I'll leave it to you how he did it. Very careful to make sure he didn't even touch that gnat. But then there's a camel in the drink somehow. He just gulps it down, doesn't even think a thing. Well, that's an almost unbelievable illustration, but that's exactly what Jesus is saying. The little things you are so precise about, but the things that matter, love and mercy and justice and faith, those important things, you don't even think about it. What's he saying? You live right on the outside, but the real things that are in the side that really are important, you don't even think about. The sixth woe. Woe, and I haven't emphasized every time because I hope you get it. He's saying, woe unto you because of this. Judgment's coming because of this. I am declaring judgment on you because of this. The sixth woe deals with show or showing or the outward, as we'll see. Woe unto you, verse 25. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you do clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within they are full of extortion and excess. Now, they were real big in cleaning, the ceremonial cleaning, the washing of themselves and their bodies and all their cooking vessels and drinking and eating vessels, their ceremonial cleanings and all that. And as the laws dictated, it was fine. They had gone overboard, if you remember, and you probably don't. I didn't hardly, and I'm the one that studied it and taught through it. About in, earlier in Matthew, Jesus talked about their washing of the hands and how they you couldn't let it drip but so far, and it had to be all the mess that they had added. And they were very careful to make sure that they kept all this cleansing stuff, and that they made sure that they cleaned everything just right. But he said, you got the outside of the vessel looking good, but the inside is full of extortion and excess. Boy, Jesus picks his words right. Remember, this bunch is really robbing widows and needy people. They're playing the, well, you really ought to give to God card, and boy, God wants you to sacrifice, and if you love the Lord, you'll give, and all those things are true. Really, be honest, but they were using it to get more people to give. Why? Because they got the benefit. I said that last week. So he said, you keep the outside good and clean, boy, you look good, you got all your rules, and you keep all your rules, but inside you're full of extortion. Inside you're a bunch of crooks. Inside, there's a bunch of excess. You got more than what you need, and you're still begging for more. You're still using people, abusing people in the name of the Lord. He said, woe unto you. You ain't getting by with it any longer. The time of judgment is on the way. They were living, again, through the offerings, if you will. And I thought about this. And I'll be careful, but Jesus sure didn't pull any punches. I'll pull some a little bit. I thought about you can turn on TV and somebody selling holy water. or someone selling a prayer cloth, and I know, you know, probably in your mind you thought, yeah, but they got Scripture. So do the Pharisees. They got Scripture, they use the way they want to make people give, to line their pockets, and you see their million-dollar homes, multi-million-dollar homes, many homes, more than one homes, and Rolls and Lincolns and diamond rings, and they still say, if you love the Lord, you'll give. Well, that's exactly what the Pharisees and scribes were doing. And Jesus said, woe unto you. Look on in verse 27. We'll look at the seventh woe. Now, this woe deals with sepulchers. Shutting, stealing, seducing, swearing, straining, show or showing sepulchers. Notice in verse 27, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. He just wants to make sure they get it. He keeps saying it over and over and over because he doesn't want them to misunderstand who he's talking to or what they are. For ye are like unto whitest sepulchres, which appear indeed beautiful outward, but ye are within, full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Look at the picture he's drawing. Whitest sepulchres. Through that land there were tombs. The law said if you find a dead body beside the road, you got to bury that dead body where it lies or as close to it as possible. So you could walk it up down the road and walk onto a grave and not even realize it unless you were very careful. So what they would do at least once a year, surely before Passover, they would go out through the land and all these sepulchres, all these tombs, wherever they were, they would take whitewash and white them and paint them. And that way it would be very obvious there's a sepulchre, there's a tomb here. Stay away. Why? Because if it touched that tomb, they were ceremonially unclean, especially heading to Passover. Hundreds of thousands of people would be making that trip toward Jerusalem, and a lot of them didn't know the territory. It would be very easy for them to walk up to a grave, step on that grave and not know it, and on the way to Passover be unclean where they couldn't even participate with all this going on. So they whitewashed these tombs at least once a year. Jesus said, you're like those whited sepulchres. Boy, you look so good outside, nice and bright and white, so pretty. But inside, there's a rotten and decaying, stinking, putrefied body. And he said, that's what you're like. You look so good on the outside, but inside you stink. Inside you're rotten. Inside you're putrefied. Inside you're wicked. Woe unto you. All uncleanness literally means impurity. I think that's a pretty good word for the inside of a grave. At the very least, filled with impurity. And he said, that's what your hearts are like. 28. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men. You look good to everybody. You got everybody convinced, but within you are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. Outside, you look good. Every indication was they were right. Everybody, hey, most people thought those Pharisees, I want my son to be raised like them. I hope my little boy grows up to be like Rabbi Bob. But Jesus said, you look good outside, but you're inside, you're wretched. Now listen to me. They didn't fool God, but they fooled people. And they're supposed to be the examples of the religious world, religious system, and biblical living. The worst people there were not the drunks or the harlots. They were the religious bunch. They prayed, they persuaded, they paid, they practiced, but they were polluted. I'll ask us all tonight, are you washed white or whitewashed? That's what they were. Look on the eighth. Woe, beginning in verse 29. This woe is with stoning. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous. Boy, you're so proud of the heroes of the faith. We do that same thing. R.A. Torrey, Billy Sunday, Mays Jackson, Corey Ten Boom, and there's nothing wrong with that. But they were so proud of the, listen, the real heroes of the faith. David, we're his offspring. Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. They were real proud of those. They built monuments to them. And to be honest, that wasn't wrong. Jesus really is not condemning that, but he is condemning the fact that you make such a big deal to lift up the Old Testament prophets and these men and women of God, and you're the kind of people who killed those prophets when they came and cursed those prophets when they came. So this deals with stoning. They stoned the prophets, and now they're claiming, put it this way, their parents, their grandparents stoned the prophets, the kind of people just like them had stoned the prophets that had been sent to them, and now they're raising monuments to those prophets. Look on in verse 30 and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. They say, boy, if we'd lived in our, when our parents did, we wouldn't have been the ones that killed them. We would have exalted those men of God. We would have appreciated those great men of God. But the only problem is, do you know what the problem was? They said, boy, if we'd been living when our parents lived, we would not have killed those men of God. But at the same time, they were plotting to kill the very Son of God. You see a little double standard there? Do you see why Jesus called them a bunch of hypocrites? This dealt with stoning the prophets and killing the prophets that they said we would have exalted. But you know what? Notice what Jesus said. Verse 31. Wherefore ye be witnesses unto yourselves that ye are the children of them which killed the prophets. He said, you talk about how you wouldn't do like your parents. You are doing like your parents. You are witnesses of yourself that you're just like your parents, like father, like son. They did it. You're doing it. You're your own witnesses. Verse 32, fill ye up then the measure of your fathers. I'm so thankful for that verse, because what he's saying is, you go ahead and do what you're going to do. You're going to do it anyway. I've tried to stop you. I've tried to open your eyes. I have done everything I can do. I've done miracles. I've done the impossible. I've been good. I've helped people. I've spoken the truth to you, and you've rejected, refused, said no, said no. So I have done all I am going to do. I am not trying any longer. Now it is woe unto you. And he said, go ahead and fill up the measure of your fathers. What's he saying? Your fathers, when they killed my prophets, as God, I got angry. And I could have judged then. And he did deal with individuals, don't misunderstand. But as far as a nation, God was long-suffering. He did not strike Israel down. But now here comes the children, and they're committing the worst of sin, which is going to be killed the Son of God. And Jesus said, you go ahead and fill up the wrath of the Father. See, God doesn't judge before it's deserved. It's like a cup of wrath. The more man does, the higher the cup gets filled. The more man sins, the higher the wrath increases. But Jesus, God, will not move, will not judge, will not strike until that wrath gets sufficient, to where that wrong gets enough, to where the wrath is deserved. Remember what Jesus, remember what God told the people of Israel? He said the wrath, if you will, of those ungodly people, the wrath of God is not yet full. They have not yet sinned enough to where God says they deserve my wrath. And until they've sinned enough to where my wrath is deserving, I will not strike. But Jesus said, what you're about to do will make it enough, and the Father will strike. And he did. 70 AD, Titus came through, destroyed Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, the holy place. Jerusalem, as we're going to see in the next chapter, we really will get there maybe, was supposed to be the spiritual center of the world. And it was the hypocritical sin of the world. Notice in verse 33, "Ye serpents, ye generations of vipers, how can ye escape the damnation of hell?" How in the world, in the condition you're in, can you escape hell? The answer is you can't. There is no way. In their condition, they was going to hell and deserved it. And Jesus pronounced 8 woes on them to make sure they knew what he was talking about. There was no hope for them. Listen, there's no hope for somebody who rejects the message of help. There's no hope for somebody that rejects the Lord. Look at verse 34. Wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them ye shall kill and crucify, and some of them ye shall scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city. He said, hey, things ain't going to change for you at all. You're going to keep doing what you've been doing. Verse 35. That upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, the son of Barachas, whom you slew between the temple and the altar. Here he's talking about, listen, the first martyr for doing right, God's will, got killed for it. Abel. To the last martyr in the Old Testament, which was Zacharias. And it says here that he got killed between the temple and the altar. Bible doesn't describe his death, but Jesus does, so we know where he got killed. And Jesus said, the blood of all these people who have been killed for walking with God, it still cries out. And it demands payment. And that payment's coming due. And when you kill me, that payment will come due. I said again, it came due 70 AD when God let Titus, really the wrath of God, wipe out Jerusalem. Verse 36, and I'll quit. I really wanted to get to the end of the chapter. Verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. The generation here, of course, means the generation that's living when this is taking place, which was them who were hearing it. Within 40 years, great Jerusalem was destroyed. The beautiful temple, which was magnificent, was destroyed. He said, the generation, the people who are hearing me, will see it come to pass. He laments over Jerusalem in the next couple of verses. Can I just read it? O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou which killest the prophets and stonest them which are sent unto thee. How often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, and you would not. It's amazing. No way in the world I'm going to start this. There's too much in it. Jesus said, woe, 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 woe. And then he said, if you'd have just let me, I'd have helped you. I tried, and you wouldn't let me. Boy, what a God we've got. I'm glad that same God loves us. But it was too late for Israel. Listen, this was the last message Jesus ever spoke to Israel. Last message he ever gave to the scribes and Pharisees. And it was this: judgment is sure, judgment is coming, and it will be severe. Well, let's stand together.